B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Thursday, August 22nd, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on WWKB 1520 in Buffalo and ESPN Radio 97.7, 100.1, and 1200 AM in Syracuse, New York. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to go over the top 10 video game weapons of all time. Plus, we're going to sit down with Jeannie Doy of ESG Law to talk about a proposed bill that may end up impacting esports. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we got an interesting story out of Blizzard that we have to talk about here.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, like we've talked a lot about vanilla World of Warcraft. And, you know, bringing it back to its old school roots and wondering, you know, maybe if Blizzard might take the opportunity to also build in some of the quality of life adjustments that they've made over time. Well, it appears that Blizzard is actually entertaining that thought.
Yeah, they're at least open to the idea, right? At the end of the day, they've said, you know, we're willing to listen to what people want.
How, though? Like, doesn't that sort of fly in the face of, like, the whole idea of WoW Classic?
No, because the whole idea of WoW Classic is giving in to your vocal man-child whiny babies who just want everything.
Mm.
That's the spirit of WoW Classic.
I don't know, man. I think that there is something a little bit deeper going on with the WoW Classic that is an indictment on the way that modern MMOs just hand everything to everyone. I think that there's, you know, there is certainly, and people have spoken with their wallets, there is a cohort of people out there who think that that time in MMOs overall were better, and they're willing to pay to have that experience revived for them.
But also with the quality of life changes that of what modern WoW has.
Well, I like the idea, Robbie, that to you, this is just an example of blatant capitulation. I don't know about that. I just think, when Blizzard looked at it, like Nate, what you're saying, there was a certain magic about kind of the early MMOs, about that we're not doing everything for you. You are going to earn these things that you want.
Well, but I mean, MMOs at some point, and I'm not sure who, I mean, I think WoW did it first, but I don't have evidence to back that up.
Well, WoW at least started it because it was the most accessible, and then other MMOs just ran.
Maybe, but at some point in MMO development, they developers wanted to stop hearing the criticism that everything isn't just given to you. That, you know, money is too hard to get. The economy is too difficult to take part in. You know, the end game is too difficult to take part in. You know, there are gatekeepers within the community. And they tried to build systems around that. Well, okay, you want to get around having to spend a bajillion hours leveling? Well, just give us $30 and boom, your character is instant max level. Those kinds of capitulations, those kinds of concessions, I think have been overall damaging to the health and well-being of online games, specifically MMOs. And it seems to me that you know, that's what WoW Classic is, right? It's a bunch of people saying, yeah, the old way was better of doing it.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know whether or not, you know, Blizzard would even follow the same development path given a second go round.
Here's the quote that they had. So it was asked, what are the plans after phase six? More content for Classic or moving to the Burning Crusade? They replied, we've done most of the hard work by bringing back 1.12. So progressing to Burning Crusade would actually be a lot easier for us. Our plan is to identify everything we need to do should we ever decide to go this route. We want to be sensitive to the desires of our players. Some may want Burning Crusade, some may not. We'll be following the Classic community closely to help determine what our next steps should be.
That's so interesting to leave it open to the community, though. You know what I mean?
Given that this whole project was, Robbie, as you said, it was born out of player desire for it to exist, it makes sense to kind of keep that mindset going. I mean, WoW has now, what, 15, 16 years almost of...
It's certainly up there.
Yeah, almost 15 years worth of history to develop on.
Sure.
They know the time. They can see the times when it was going well and the times when it was going not as well, Mr. Pandaria.
Now, I realize that MMOs are a different beast from normal games because your game thrives on your community. But is this not just getting closer and closer to development by committee?
I mean, yes.
You're literally going back and rewriting your development history now on the whims of the players?
Yeah, but what if Blizzard takes an alternate path? What if they do something different besides going down the Burning Crusade
route?
So
now you have two different World of Warcraft games you're out there developing?
No. If you do develop, like, if you do continue to develop, like, what's the point in investing in WoW Classic? And here's where things get interesting, because you could, in theory, partition different servers at different points in time, right?
And so you would say, play whatever your favorite era was.
Exactly.
Leave us alone.
Right, kind of.
Yeah, so you log in and you can make a character in Wrath of the Lich King,
right.
Crusade, Cataclysm, wherever... You had, like, if they identified basically what was the ideal patch of every expansion and just
well, it's going to be different from person to person to person.
But absolutely.
You could, as the developer, identify, okay, this is where things seem to be going the most healthiest.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Right? When you put out the Mists of Pandaria server and there's seven people, you can go, okay, we can safely shut that one down and they can just choose between whatever the hell we have left. Right? So, I mean, I think that this is an interesting idea where, you know, then you're not alienating the hundreds of thousands of people that have bought into WoW Classic, because I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people who want it to stay at, you know, the 1.12.
Well, problem is, there's only so much content.
All right, well, I agree, but here's the thing: if you could create, like you say, if we had a different server for different periods in time, right? Well, once those servers exist and they're running, because it's like we say with this one, it's on patch 1.12.
Yeah.
That server is made. It really doesn't need to be updated from there. Once it exists.
Until people want more.
Right. So here's what I'm saying, though. If they have one for, you know, say seven different points in World of Warcraft's history, right? Those are the seven. Once those seven servers exist,
yeah,
they really don't need to have much done to them at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can literally just say,
set it and forget it.
For your subscription that you would normally be paying, you have access to whatever period of time you want to go play on. That's really interesting to me.
I mean, as a Robbie, you are admittedly the only WoW player, the only WoW fan in the bunch. Is that something that is even remotely appealing to you?
Look, in a perfect world, if you could just set it and forget it, you're right. That is really interesting. And I think there are people, especially if you put in a system that would allow you, like, you know, you play through WoW Classic. I want to go into the Burning Crusade now. Offer a service that transfers your character from Classic to Burning Crusade so you could keep going through them. Because obviously going through them now in the way that you do, it's not like going through it originally.
But that would be kind of dope.
However,
yeah,
that's in a perfect world. We know what gamers and MMO players are like, and those who just want WoW Classic are going to finish WoW Classic. They hated Burning Crusade. We want to keep playing here, but there's no new content for us. Give us new content in WoW Classic. And Blizzard's given in this far, thus far.
Yeah.
What's to stop them from going further?
I mean,
where does it end?
See, to me, that's the other route to go. Because, yeah, you do want to, on some level, support a game like that. But the question of how you do it exactly is very difficult.
Look, Epic Lurker says, 2019, hashtag no changes. 2021, hashtag nothing left to do again.
Change it. But follow me on this. What if, so that happens, right? They finish off WoW Classic, they're bored of it, they want something new. So they start developing stuff new in World of Warcraft Classic, right? Until eventually the two stories merge down the line. What a weird alternate way of doing storytelling in an MMO. That would be kind of fascinating.
I mean, it would be.
In theory, but yeah. In practice, man.
It would be chaos.
The development... The way that development works in the industry is already chaos.
I mean, compare it back to FF11 for us. If we could have a server that was basically set on the final patch before the next expansion came out each time,
yeah,
and you could go back and, like,
play, you know,
Treasures of Otter
Treasures of Otter Gone without. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? I don't think it works as well with FF11, actually, as I think about it.
Because you could just get to the end and just keep on playing. There was enough content to keep you going forever.
And frankly, there's only two periods in time, basically, that I even want to play in FF11. So, you know what? Never mind. Let's stick with WoW. I think it works actually fairly interestingly well in WoW.
Yeah, I think it does. And, I mean, on some level, Blizzard is going to have to answer this question. Clearly, they keep having it set in front of them. So, you know, at what point do you finally pull the trigger and go, okay, we're going to make some improvements here on Classic? And then how do you do it without alienating the purists?
Yes, we have to go. At some point, we have World of Warcraft that's on its, you know, umpteenth expansion that we have to keep working on. We can't keep dedicating our resources to a game that's 15 years old.
Here you go. They asked us a second question. Considering the nature of WoW Classic and why people love it, would other tweaks to things that the vanilla community dislike be on the table? Examples, no LFG in Wrath, undoing some blatant unneeded homogenization and patches, or possibly an eye level squish in the Burning Crusade and Wrath so that old content is not marginalized. We're looking into what would be required to support Burning Crusade and Wrath of the Lich King, should we ever decide to go that route. The guiding principle for WoW Classic was staying faithful to the original game. It's less clear what our direction should be with Burning Crusade and Wrath of the Lich King. As you point out, it is likely that some features of these expansions would not be universally embraced by the Classic community. We'll be following player progression and sentiment to help guide us in our next steps. And Robbie, you're kind of right. They're kind of listening to the community on this one. As much as current WoW, the real WoW as it was, is still very much their product and what they're working on, this does seem like something that is for the fans.
Well, listen, we want to hear from you. What do you think should happen with WoW Classic's development? Should they, you know, keep adding things to it? Should they do different partition servers for different expansions? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll sit down with Jeannie Doy of ESG Law to talk about a very concerning law that's making its way through the upper echelons of government that could impact esports as we know it. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we're going to talk about the top 10 video game weapons of all time, because, of course, video games don't make you violent, right?
Right, of course not.
Top 10 video game weapons ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
The top 10 video game weapons of all time. Do you think you could name them? That's what we're going to try to do here on Checkpoint XP. Welcome back. I want to thank everyone listening on the heartbeat of East Texas. 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, as well as 1250 ESPN San Antonio and The Zone 1150. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the BPod Network at BPodStudios.com. For more great listening options like Inside the Ropes, a weekly look inside wrestling in the WWE, and Talk and Rock with Mel, down an interview and music news podcast, then go to bpodstudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery. If I asked you to name the top 10 video game weapons of all time, do you think you could do them? How accurate do you think you would be? We've got a list here today from thetop10s.com.
Yeah, what is that?
It's a crowdsourcing website.
Oh.
So, again, if you guys have a problem with this list, you only all have right, yourselves all right.
So,
to blame.
So we have to put ourselves in the minds of the masses, Nate.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Okay. We're going to walk through these. Because some of them are real.
I think I can get one.
You want to guess a couple?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let you guess a couple if you want.
The Minecraft pickaxe.
The Minecraft pickaxe is not on this list.
Oh, really?
It does not make the top 10. I'm scrolling down to see if it's anywhere lower.
No, don't worry about it. It's fine. Don't
worry about it. What about the BFG from Doom?
the BFG from Doom is number 3 on this list.
There you go.
Boom! I mean, and when you talk about
the energy sword from Halo.
Well, let's do the BFG first here. Oh. The BFG, a all-time classic of a weapon.
Yes.
I mean, everyone knows what it stands for. The big friendly giant, of course. Doesn't stand for anything else.
I'm pretty sure it's big effing gun.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. Robbie, what did you say? I'm sorry.
The energy sword from Halo.
The energy sword from Halo is number 6 on this list, not the only Halo weapon.
You
to
know
make
what?
This list.
You'd sit in here not putting any stock in Nate and I. We got this.
Yeah, come on.
We can do this.
I'm going to actually use Rav Mal's suggestion from the chat.
Okay.
The Buster Sword, which hangs in my own living room above my television.
The Buster Sword is an all-time classic that is not on this list.
Okay. Okay.
Boo.
Okay.
But you trash. Know what? That's
sword
trash.
That needs to be on there that I have. The Master Sword from Zelda.
Yeah. The Master Sword is number 1.
Hey!
That's right. Okay. This ain't all that bad.
At the end of the day, it lets you travel through time. It's a pretty cool sword. Yeah, the Master Sword gets number 1. I don't feel like it should be number 1. There's better weapons.
What? It depends on what you classify as, like, better. Like,
it's probably one of the most iconic swords that you can think of, mm-hmm. and one of the very first ones from when I was a kid I could name that was a big deal.
It's iconic.
I was drawing it in notebooks as a kid. Yeah. You know what I mean? Everyone, like, that's a big deal.
Everyone knows what it looks like. Yes. That's fair.
You know what? Speaking of iconic, the portal gun, even though it's not really a weapon. I mean, you know, I've killed people with it. Yeah, it's a weapon.
The portal gun is number 4 on this
list.
Wow.
Yeah, you know
not
what?
Bad.
Screw you, Joe, not bad. We couldn't do this.
You doubter.
You've gotten a lot of the ones that I agree with on this list. I'll say that. Because when I looked at the top 10, I was like, about 5 of these I'm good with, and about 5 of these I'm less good
with. What about the gravity gun from Half-Life 2?
The other one I agree with. Number 2 on this list.
All right. Okay.
The gravity gun's interesting because, like, it kind of feels cheap to put both the gravity gun and the portal gun on the same list.
Yeah.
But you could do some really cool stuff with the gravity
gun. You really could, and it's one of the ones that sticks out. Like, it showed off the ability of an engine to actually, like, calculate physics. You know what I mean? Like, it was a big deal for the time in terms of, like, moving video games forward.
It definitely feels like there's a design meeting where they were like, all right, we put a physics engine in this game. You're going to use it.
Yes.
All right, I got one more.
Okay.
The golden gun from GoldenEye.
Oh, what a great answer. That isn't on this list anywhere.
What?
The golden gun from GoldenEye is an all-time classic that is not on this list.
What about a fire flower from Mario?
Oh, what a great suggestion. That isn't anywhere on this list.
Really?
The fire flower does not make the
list. All right. What else we got then? Let's judge the rest of these.
All right. You ready to get judgy? Number 10, the 10th best weapon of all time in video games. The Keyblade.
Come on. First of all, blade is a strong word. I've never seen a sharpened edge on a keyblade.
It was a bludgeoning weapon, is what it was. I still remember one of the lines from Kingdom Hearts 1 where Riku has it and gives it back and goes, there can only be one Keyblade wielder, and nowadays everyone has them.
I like NeuralNet in the chat saying, are we out of touch? No, it's the kids who are wrong. Number 9 on this list, the Cerebral Boar from Turok.
I'm sorry, what?
That's a drill that you shot out and burrowed, like you shot a drill at someone and it like burrowed into their head. It was actually pretty cool.
I played a lot of Turok. I don't remember it.
Oh, yeah, man. The Cerebral Boar. Not a great name, though. I'm not a fan of the name.
No, that sounds like something that you hunt.
Yes, agreed. Number 8, again from Halo, the Spartan Laser. I don't feel like it's well known enough to make this list, but it is the coolest weapon in Halo, in my opinion. It's Halo's equivalent of the BFG.
Yeah.
It can hold two shots maximum. And it one shots anything it hits. It's awesome.
Is the Fat Man from the Fallout games in there? You know, it's kind of hard to argue with a shoulder mounted nuclear launcher.
Well, people would argue with you because it is not on this list.
This is objectively stupid.
I don't disagree with you. Number 7, from BioShock Infinite. The Skyhook.
Yeah. You know what? I almost said this. But you were saying that this list was so basic. I was like, there's no way that they would put the Skyhook in.
The Skyhook, I had to think about it for a minute. Like, yeah, you know what? It's pretty cool. It moves you around the city, and there is that scene where you like bury it in the guy's face near the beginning, which is objectively pretty sweet. So, yeah, the Skyhook, I'm pretty good with that. Number five, the Thompson 1928 from Mafia 2.
Okay, how many votes are on some of these?
Come on.
Because I hear that, and I go like,
it's a Tommy gun. It's a Tommy gun. That's all it is.
50 people have voted on this list. Tops.
Right. Like, I get it. Like, and the Tommy gun's cool. It's
whatever.
Classic.
But like,
really? Like,
you're gonna take that over the Fat Man?
Yeah. Exactly. No.
Come on.
Way.
You know what? Jurassic Q in the chat. Assassin's Creed Hidden Blade.
Oh.
Assassin's Creed Hidden Blade is not in the top
get
10
out.
Anywhere.
Get
Man,
out.
Not
in the top 20.
That's disappointing.
Not in the top 30.
Oh my god. This.
All right.
No,
oh
hey. We're not using the top.
Robbie, I found the Golden Gun. It's number 35 on this list.
This is trash.
Right behind the Laptop Gun from Perfect Dark.
This is trash.
That is trash because the Laptop Gun is the best gun of all time. All
right. We've only got a minute. Was there any other ones that we missed?
No, we got them all. I'm going to run it down from 10 to 1. So we had the Keyblade, the Cerebral Bore, the Spartan Laser, the Skyhook, the Energy Sword from Halo, the Thompson 1928 from Mafia 2, the Portal Gun. Specifically, they say the one from Portal 2. I don't know why. Because it had the other mechanics to it. That's right. The BFG from Doom came in at number 3. The Gravity Gun from Half-Life 2. And the Master Sword from The Legend of Zelda in at number 1.
About 50-50 on this list, I agree with, and 50, I don't. I'm not terribly impressed.
Bad.
Not terribly impressed. Here's the thing. This is this week's social media question. So make sure you're following us on Facebook and Twitter. That's Checkpoint XP and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. And help us come up with a better list of top video game weapons. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to sit down with Jeannie Joy of ESG Law to talk about a pretty concerning immigration bill that might end up impacting esports. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. Joining us now is Jeannie Doy. She's an immigration lawyer with Electronic Sports and Gaming Law, an esports specific law firm in Los Angeles. Welcome into Checkpoint XP.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we definitely want to dive deep into this bill that could end up impacting esports, S386. But before we get to that, this is really fascinating that there are lawyers out there handling specifically esports law. I mean, it should be obvious to everyone considering how critical that is to the esports industry. But how did you end up working with ESG Law?
Very good question. So I've been doing immigration for a while, and I hadn't been introduced to the world of esports until about 2 years ago. I just happened to be introduced to Bryce by a mutual acquaintance because that acquaintance realized a huge pain point in the esports industry is visas and immigration and just the law firms and the attorneys that were serving the esports players and teams thus far, we're just not understanding the pace at which things need to happen, not really understanding the industry and, you know, I'm a millennial. I'm a digital native. I grew up playing video games. My husband also works in the industry. And so it felt a little bit more native for me to be able to serve that community. And as soon as I started doing my first esports cases, I just fell in love with it. I try to leverage technology as much as I can in my practice just to meet the needs of my clients where they are. So, for example, Discord. Like, another immigration attorney is not going to know what Discord even is, but I often do meetings with my clients over Discord, practice interviews over Discord. You know, some of my clients are really young and may not even like email, and so I'll take messages and questions from them through Discord as well.
So we got to hear about, you know, S386. What is it? What does it mean for esports? And you know, just to the layman, what is going on?
Sure. So S386 is a bill that has already passed through the House and is now being presented to the Senate. And in layman's terms, like, if you would think about, everyone needs to wait in line for a green card. And then when you apply for a green card, the way they schedule where you are in line is based upon two things: the country in which you were born and the category of green card that you are applying. So let's say, for example, you were born in India and you are in the EB2 category because you are a software engineer with a master's degree. Mm. It would still take you about 25 years to get a green
card. Wow.
Yeah. It's basically someone's entire career. It's their lifetime, right? Or, you know, working lifetime. So that is the situation for Indian nationals. But let's say you have a software engineer working for the same company who got a master's degree from the same school, but they happen to be born in Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka is not India. It's a distinct country from India. Mm-hmm. That person would probably only wait maybe less than 2 years for their green card. So it's this huge unfair disparity between who gets the green card when, and it's not based on merit. It's entirely based upon the country in which you were born. And so that's what the problem that this law seeks to solve is: let's even the playing field for, you know, everybody waiting for a green card, regardless of where you were born. And so, obviously, companies like Amazon, Google, Facebook, Twitter, companies that employ large numbers of Indian and Chinese nationals who are software engineers, they are putting their power behind this bill. Whereas I think industries and communities that may not have as much political power as those tech giants, their needs are kind of getting lost in the fray. And one of them, you know, is esports. Esports is now a multi-billion dollar industry. But taking green card processing times from 2 years to 7 years for an esports player, that's the lifetime of their career. That could be the life cycle of an entire game. So it basically removes green cards as an option entirely for anyone who is not an Indian or Chinese software engineer.
Well, and I mean, on the outside, that seems like a remarkably fair and equitable proposal.
Right, when you're stepping back and looking at it on the macro.
Exactly, yeah. And it seems like, oh, okay, well, it just levels the playing field, and so everyone has to wait an equal amount of time. But Jeannie, as you had just pointed out, you know, for esports competitors, extending beyond a year or 2 years, the life of the game itself, even in the competition, even becomes questionable. So, you know, how devastating of an impact could this have on the esports industry if this becomes law?
So a lot of my clients are Korean, and most of my clients who seek green cards are Korean. And for the singular reason of being able to postpone their military service in Korea. So South Korea is one of those countries where all males of a certain age have to serve 2 years in the military. Mm-hmm. And so the years that one needs to report for duty perfectly coincide with the peak years of an esports player's career. And as you well know, you know, some of the top players in, you know, League of Legends are from South Korea. a vast majority of the top players in Overwatch League are from South Korea. You have entire teams with, you know, completely South Korean rosters. The clock is ticking for a lot of those players. And the only way South Korea allows them to postpone their military service is if they have a green card.
So, I mean, I come from a background of watching a lot of StarCraft, and that's a major thing in the StarCraft scene. You would frequently watch one of your favorite players, and they would suddenly just kind of vanish off the face of the planet. And then 2 years later, they would suddenly reemerge on the scene because they had to go serve their military time.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yeah, if they were able to come, you know, compete stateside, a lot of times they would be able to delay that military service as long as they had their green card.
Oh, wow. See, because I had assumed that if something like this goes through, we might just see that talent exit being able to play on American soil, but then they'd have to go into the military and the entire scene would actually lose them for a few years.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I mean, you know, esports is something that is inherently international. The way that we play online, you know, if you really want to be playing against the best, you really want to be playing on the international stage. And, you know, I see this being not only devastating to, you know, the ability for, you know, leagues like the NALCS or the OWL to, you know, be able to continue to have talent operating within the United States, but I also see, you know, huge international events, you know, something like DreamHack Denver,
right?
Or the international
ESL.
ESL, the international just went through this of moving from Seattle to Vancouver.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering, Jeannie, can you speak to that at all? You know, what this might do for tournament organizers, or, you know, some of these large moneyed interests that are operating within the United States. How could this end up impacting them?
So, you know, we've already seen in the industry a shift from having U.S.-based tournaments and events, you know, taking them overseas. Like you just mentioned, TI went from Seattle and then to Vancouver, and now they're in Shanghai. And next year with Overwatch League, they're taking the teams, you know, to do home games hosted throughout Europe, throughout East Asia. And so a lot of, and, you know, League of Legends, their world championship has been overseas for the past several years, and they're not coming back to North America for quite a while. And I suspect that it's just easier for tournament organizers to have competitors and just spectators come to those countries rather than the United States. Just because of the political situation right now, it's even hard to get visitors' visas just to go to Disney World, for example.
Sure.
So, you know, I imagine that it's going to be, there's more incentive for these events to be taken overseas. And similarly, Korean players who face military challenges, it's not only that they're unable to postpone their military service if they don't have a green card. The government starts issuing them very limited passports. So it affects their ability to even leave South Korea. So even if those tournaments do get, you know, moved to Shanghai or they do get moved to Europe, Korean players who don't have green cards may not be able to compete because they can't leave South Korea.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're sitting down with Jeannie Doy. She's an immigration lawyer with Electronic Sports and Gaming Law, talking about the potential bill that is working its way through the Senate at the moment. S-386 seems to have a lot of support also. I have to imagine, though, that, you know, esports is not the only industry that's heavily affected by this, that, you know, sports, you know,
yeah,
traditional sports is an international endeavor as well.
Yeah, I think about baseball, a lot of Latin American players,
hockey,
European influences.
Absolutely. Well, even something like the Olympics, if it were to be held here in the U.S., would have a really difficult time, I think, you know, it seems like, getting, you know, competitors into the U.S. Is that actually what you're seeing out there?
Yeah, so it's funny you mentioned the Olympics, because you know, and we all know, that the Olympics is the foremost, like, recognizable and the highest kind of athletic feat that, you know, a person can accomplish in their career. I have heard of my similar immigration attorney friends who represent, you know, professional track athletes, tennis players, PGA golfers. They're getting pushback from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services asking the attorney to explain how exactly it is that the Olympics qualify as an event of distinguished reputation.
Really? If they're asking questions like that, how in the world do you even explain esports to them?
Exactly. So when it comes to esports, I think because, you know, it's such a new industry, I'm able to explain it in a way that translates to traditional sports. Like a lot of times I'll translate League of Legends into NBA basketball and kind of make those analogies. But for example, one recent request for additional evidence I got asked me to explain, like, why does this professional Fortnite player even have to be in the United States to compete if this is an online free-to-play game?
Wow.
And so I had to explain, like, what LAN is. I had to explain that the Fortnite World Cup was just held in New York, which happens to be in the United States. So just super basic things like that. You know, in the past, I would say about a year and a half ago, you know, immigration wasn't raising those flags, wasn't pushing back on it. But about January of last year is when we started seeing a lot of the pushback.
It passed the House already by a fairly significant margin. It must have some level of bipartisan support. My question would be, what can we as the esports community do to kind of combat, or if worse comes to worse, prepare for this scenario in the future?
Sure. So first and foremost is contact your state senator. You can go online, just Google, like, how do I contact my state senator? And you can write them a letter. Or you can send them a message through their website and just try to educate your senator. Let them know, like, what the esports industry is, how important it is to you, and what it would mean for you if your favorite players or your favorite team, you know, was not able to obtain a green card or was, you know, their career was kind of cut short because they weren't able to obtain immigration benefits. And, you know, senators often don't understand the immediate issue and the practical implications. So putting it in those terms, like how it would affect your life and this industry that you love so much, would be very helpful. But I would also draw their attention to an alternative measure proposed by Rand Paul, who, he has a solution that would drastically reduce waiting times for Indian and Chinese nationals, but at the same time, not affect the waiting times for everyone else. So what he proposes to do is, instead of leveling out the immigration wait times, is just add more green cards to the pot. Right now, the government only allows a limited amount of green cards per fiscal year. But Rand Paul is like, obviously, there is a need for these types of workers in the United States. Let's just throw more green cards in the pot, and that'll decrease waiting times for everybody.
Well, that sounds like a pretty equitable solution as well. Jeannie Doy has been our guest here, lawyer with Electronic Sports and Gaming Law. Jeannie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks again to Jeannie Doy for her time, and make sure you follow her on Twitter at PureJeannieUS. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a full archive of episodes, podcasts, and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP. Robbie Landis, even though he's not here, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's A. Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.